Chapter 34. Drifting. Rand stood in a place that was not. A place outside of time, outside of the pattern itself. All around him spread a vast nothingness. Voracious and hungry, it longed to consume. He could actually see the pattern. It looked like thousands upon thousands of twisting ribbons of light. They spun around him, above him, undulating and shimmering, twisting together. At least that was how his mind chose to interpret it. Everything that had ever been, everything that could be, everything that could have been, it all lay right there before him. Rand could not comprehend it. The blackness around it sucked on him, pulled him toward it. He reached out to the pattern and somehow anchored himself in it, lest he be consumed. That changed his focus. It locked him, slightly, into a time. The pattern before him rippled, and Rand watched it being woven. It was not actually the pattern, he knew, but his mind saw it that way. Familiar, as it had been described, the threads of lives weaving together. Rand anchored himself in reality again and moved with it. Time had meaning again, and he could not see ahead or behind. He could see all places, like a man standing above a globe as it turned. Rand faced the emptiness. "So," he said into it, "this is where it will really happen. Morden would have had me believe that a simple sword fight would decide this all."
"He is of me, but his eyes are small."
"Yes," Rand said, "I have noticed the same."
"Small tools can be effective. The thinnest of knives can stop a heart. He has brought you here, adversary."
None of this had happened the last time when Rand had worn the name of Luce Theron. He could only interpret that as a good sign. Now the battle truly began. He looked into the nothingness and felt it welling up. Then, like a sudden storm, the Dark One brought all of his force against Rand. Perrin fell back against a tree, gasping at the pain. Slayer's arrow had impaled his shoulder, the arrowhead coming out his back. He didn't dare pull it free, not with... He wavered. Thoughts came lethargically. Where was he? He'd shifted away from Slayer as far as he could go, but... He didn't recognize this place. The trees were odd-shaped on top, too leafy, of a variety he'd never before seen. The storm blew here, but far more weakly. Perrin slipped and hit the ground with a grunt. His shoulder flared with pain. He rolled over, staring up at the sky. He'd broken the arrow when falling.
It's the wolf dream. I can just make the arrow vanish.
He tried to gather the strength to do so, but was too weak. He found himself floating, and he sent outward seeking for wolves. He found the minds of some, and they started, sending back surprise.
A two legs who can talk. What is this? What are you?
His nature seemed to frighten them, and they pushed him out of their minds. How could they not know what he was? Wolves had long, long memories. Surely, surely.
"Fael," he thought. "So beautiful, so clever. I should go to her. I just need to close this way gate, and I can get back to the two rivers to her."
Perrin rolled over and crawled to his knees. Was that his blood on the ground? So much red. He blinked at it.
"Here you are," a voice said.
Lanfear. He looked up at her, his vision blurry.
"So he defeated you," she said,
folding her arms.
"Disappointing. I didn't want to have to choose that one. I find you much more appealing, wolf."
"Please," he croaked.
"I'm tempted, though I shouldn't be," she said. "You've proven yourself weak."
I can beat him."
Suddenly the shame of having failed in front of her crushed Perrin. When had he started worrying about what Lanfear thought of him? He couldn't quite point to it. She tapped one finger on her arm.
"Please,"
Perrin said, raising a hand.
"Please."
"No,"
she said, turning away.
"I've learned the mistake of setting my heart on one who does not deserve it. Goodbye, wolf pup."
She vanished, leaving Perrin on his hands and knees in this strange place.
"Fael,"
a piece of his mind said.
"Don't worry about Lanfear. You have to go to Fael."
Yes. Yes, he could go to her, couldn't he? Where was she? The Field of Marilor. That was where he'd left her. It was where she would be. He shifted there, somehow gathering himself just enough to manage it. But of course she wasn't there. He was in the wolf dream. The portal Rand would send. It would be here. He just had to get to it. He needed... He collapsed to the ground and rolled to his back. He felt himself drifting into nothingness. His vision blackened as he stared up at the churning sky.
At least I was there for Rand,
Perrin thought. The wolves could hold Shael Ghul on this side now, couldn't they? They could keep Rand safe. They'd have to.
Fael poked a stick at their meager cook fire. Darkness had fallen, and the fire glowed with a faint red light. They hadn't dared make it larger. Deadly things prowled the blight. Trollocs were the least of the dangers here. The air here smelled pungent, and Fael expected to find a rotting corpse behind every black-speckled shrub. The ground cracked when she stepped, dry earth crushing beneath her boots, as if rain had not been seen in centuries. As she sat in the camp, she saw a group of sickly green lights, like glowing insects in a swarm, passing in the distance over a stand of silhouetted trees. She knew enough of the blight to hold her breath until they passed. She did not know what they were, and did not want to know. She had led her group on a short hike to find this place for a camp. Along the way, one caravan worker had been killed by a twig, another by stepping in what looked like mud, but it had dissolved his leg. He'd gotten some of it on his face. He had thrashed and screamed as he died. They'd had to forcibly gag him to keep the sounds from bringing other horrors. The blight. They couldn't survive up here. A simple walk had killed two of their members, and Fael had some 100 people to try to protect. Guards from the band, some members of Cha Fael, and the wagon drivers and workers from her supply caravan. 8 of the wagons still worked, and they'd brought those to this camp for now. They would probably be too conspicuous to take farther. She wasn't even certain they would survive this night. Light. Their only chance of rescue seemed to lie with the Aes Sedai. Would they notice what had happened and send help? It seemed a very faint hope, but she did not know about the One Power. All right, Fael said softly to those who sat with her. Mandevwin, Aravine, Harnan, Setala, and Arala of Cha Fael. Let's talk. The others looked hollow. Probably, like Fael, they had been frightened with stories of the blight since childhood. The quick deaths in their party soon after entering this land had reinforced that. They knew how dangerous this place was. They kept jumping at every sound in the night. I will explain what I can, Fael said, trying to divert them from the death all around. During the bubble of evil, one of those crystals speared Barisha Sedai's foot, right as she made the gateway. A wound? Mandevwin asked from his place beside the fire. Would that have been enough to make the gateway go awry? Truly, I know little of Aes Sedai business, nor have I wanted to. If one is distracted, is it possible to create an accidental opening to the wrong place? Satala frowned, and the expression drew Fail's attention. Satala was neither nobility nor an officer. There was something about the woman, however. She projected authority and wisdom. "You know something?" Fail asked her. Satala cleared her throat. "I know some little about channeling. It was once an area of curiosity to me. Sometimes if a weave is done incorrectly, it simply does nothing. Other times the result is disastrous. I have not heard of a weave doing something like this. Working, but in the wrong way." "Well," Harnan said, watching that darkness and shivering visibly, "the alternative is to think that she wanted to send us to the Blight."
"Perhaps she was disoriented," Fail said. "The pressure of the moment made her send us to the wrong place. I've been turned about before in a moment of tension and found myself running in the wrong direction. It could be like that." The others nodded, but again Satala looked concerned. "What is it?" Fail prodded. "Aes Sedai training is very extensive in relation to this type of situation," Satala said. "No woman reaches the level of Aes Sedai without learning how to channel under extreme pressure. There are specific barriers a woman must clear in order to wear the ring." "So," Fail thought, "Satala must have a relative who is Aes Sedai, someone close, if they shared information so private. A sister, perhaps?" "Then do we assume that this is some kind of trap?" Aravine sounded confused. "That Barisha was some kind of dark friend. Surely the shadow has greater things to misdirect than a simple supply train?" Fail said nothing. The horn was safe. The chest it was in now sat in her small tent nearby. They had circled the wagons and had allowed only this one fire. The rest of the caravan slept, or tried to. The still, too silent air made Fail feel as if they were being watched by a thousand eyes. If the shadow had planned a trap for her caravan, it meant the shadow knew about the horn. In that case, they were in very serious danger. More serious, even, than being in the Blight itself. "No," Satala said. "No, Aravine is right. This could not have been an intentional trap. If the bubble of evil hadn't come, we would never have burst through the opening without looking where it led. So far as we know, these bubbles are completely random." "Unless Barisha was simply taking advantage of the circumstances," Fail thought. "Also, there was the woman's death. That wound in her stomach had not looked like one caused by the spikes. It had looked like a knife wound, as if someone had attacked Barisha once the horn was through the gateway, to keep her from telling what she'd done." "Light," Fail thought. "I am growing suspicious."
"So," Harnan said, "what do we do?"
"That depends," Fail said, looking toward Satala. "Is there any way an Aes Sedai could tell where we've been sent?" Satala hesitated, as if reluctant to reveal how much she knew. When she continued, however, she spoke with confidence. "Weaves leave behind a residue. So yes, an Aes Sedai could discover where we'd gone. The residue does not last long, however. A few days at most for a powerful weave. And not all channelers can read residues. This is a rare talent." The way she spoke, so commanding and authoritative, the way she projected an immediate sense of being trustworthy. It wasn't a relative then, Fail thought. This woman trained in the White Tower. Was she perhaps like Queen Morghese? Too weak in the One Power to become Aes Sedai?
"We will wait one day," Fail said. "If nobody has come for us by then, we will head south and try to escape the blight as quickly as possible.
"I wonder how far north we are,"
Harnan said, rubbing his chin.
"I don't fancy going over mountains to get back home. You'd rather remain in the blight?"
Mandevwin asked.
"Well, no," Harnan said. "But it could take months to walk back to safety. Months traveling through the blight itself."
Light, Fael thought. Traveling months in a place where we're lucky to have lost only two in one day. They'd never make it. Even without the wagons, the caravan would stand out in this landscape like a fresh wound on diseased skin. They'd be lucky to last another day or two. She resisted the urge to glance back at the tent. What would happen if she didn't bring it to Matt in time?
"There is another option," Setala said hesitantly.
Fael looked to her. "That peak you see to the east of us," Setala said, speaking with obvious reluctance. "That is Shael Ghul." Mandevwin whispered something quietly that Fael didn't catch, squeezing his eyes shut. The others looked sick. Fael, however, caught Setala's implication.
"That is where the Dragon Reborn is making war against the Shadow," Fael said. "One of our armies will be there, with channelers who could get us out."
"Indeed," Setala said. "And the area just around Shael Ghul is known as the Blasted Lands, lands that the horrors of the Blight are said to avoid."
"Because it's so terrible," Arala said. "If they don't go there, it's because they fear the Dark One himself."
"The Dark One and his armies might have their attention on the fighting," Fael said slowly, nodding her head. "We can't survive long in the Blight. We'll be dead before the week is out. But if the Blasted Lands are free of those horrors, and if we can reach our armies there..." It seemed a far better hope, slim though it was, than trying to march for months in the most dangerous place in the world. She told the others she'd consider what to do, and dismissed them. Her advisors moved off to make their bedrolls, Mandevwin going to check the men on watch. Fael remained staring at the embers of the fire, feeling sick. "Someone did kill Berisha," she thought. "I'm certain of it. The gateway's location really could have been an accident. Accidents happened even to Aes Sedai, no matter what Setala thought. But if there was a dark friend in the caravan, one who had ducked through the opening and seen that it went to the blight, they could have easily decided to kill Berisha in order to leave the horn and the caravan stranded."
"Setala," Fael said as the woman passed.
"A word."
Setala sat down beside Fael, wearing a composed expression.
"I know what you're going to ask."
"How long has it been," Fael asked,
"since you were in the White Tower?"
"It has been decades now. Are you capable of making a gateway?"
Setala laughed.
"Child, I couldn't light a candle. I was burned out in an accident. I haven't held the One Power in over 25 years.
"I see," Fael said. "Thank you."
Setala moved off, and Fael found herself wondering, how truthful was her story? Setala had been very helpful in their days together, and Fael couldn't blame the woman for keeping secret her ties to the White Tower. In any other situation, Fael wouldn't have given the woman's story a moment of doubt. However, there was no way out here to confirm what she said. If Setala was Black Adja in hiding, her story about being burned out could simply be that, a story. Perhaps she could still channel, or perhaps she couldn't but had been stilled as a punishment. Could this woman be an escaped prisoner of the most dangerous type? An agent who had waited decades for the right moment to strike? Setala had been the one to suggest they go to Shael Ghul. Was she seeking to bring the horn to her master? Feeling cold,
Fail entered her tent as several members of Chafail set up watch around it. Fail wrapped herself in her bedroll. She knew that she was being overly suspicious, but how else was she to be, considering the circumstances? Light, she thought. The Horn of Valir, lost in the Blight. A nightmare. Avienda knelt on one knee beside the smoldering corpse, holding her Angreal, the turtle brooch that Elaine had given her. She breathed through her mouth as she gazed down on the man's face. There were a surprising number of these red veils. Whatever their origins, they were not Aiel. They did not follow Je'ito. During the night's fighting, she had seen two maidens take a man captive. He had acted like Gaishain, but had then killed one from behind with a hidden knife. Well? Serene asked, breathless. While those at the field of Merilor rested and prepared for their challenge ahead, this battle at Sheol Ghul continued. The Red Veil attack had lasted all through the night, the following day, and now into the night again. I think I knew him, Avienda said, disturbed. He channeled for the first time when I was a child, making Algoda grow where it should not. She let the veil fall down on his face. His name was Sorrow. He was kind to me. I watched him run across the dry ground at sunset after vowing to spit in Sight Blinder's eye. I'm sorry, Serene said, though her voice was uncolored by any sympathy. Avienda was growing accustomed to that in the woman. It wasn't that Serene didn't care. She just didn't let caring distract her, at least not when her warder was elsewhere. The Aes Sedai would have made a fine maiden. Let's keep moving, Avienda said, taking off with her pack of channelers. During the days and nights of fighting, Avienda's team had shifted, melded, and split as women needed rest. Avienda herself had slept sometime during the day. By common agreement, the one leading the circle avoided drawing on her own power. Thus, Avienda was still at reasonable strength, despite so many hours of fighting. This allowed her to remain alert on the hunt. The other women became wells of power to be drawn upon. She had to be careful not to drain them too far. Tire a woman and she could sleep for a few hours and be back up to fight again. Drain her completely and she could be useless for days. At the moment, Avienda had Flynn and three Aes Sedai with her. She had learned the weave to tell her when a man was channeling nearby. It was moving through the Aes Sedai and Wise Ones, but having a male channeler with her was far more useful. Flynn pointed toward some flashes of fire on the other side of the valley. They loped in that direction, passing corpses and places where the ground smoldered. With the growing light of dawn, Avienda could see through the cold mist that Darlin's forces still held the mouth of the valley. The Trollocs had pushed forward to the low earthen mounds that Aetoralda had built. Killing had been done there on both sides. The Trollocs had taken far more losses, but then they were also far more numerous. It seemed from her quick glance that they had overrun one of the earthen bulwarks, but Damani riders had come in from the reserves and were pushing them back. Bands of Aiel roved and fought in the mouth of the valley itself, some with red veils, some with black. Too many, Avienda thought, as she slowed her team with a raised hand. She then continued forward on her own, quietly. She could draw a few hundred paces away from the women and still have access to their power. She picked her way through the barren, rocky fields of the valley. There were three dead bodies to her right, two with black veils. She tested them with a quick delving. She would not be caught by the old trick of hiding among the corpses. She had used that one herself. These three were truly dead, so she continued on in a crouch. In addition to the place where the Tyrans and Damani held the Trollocs back, they had a second force guarding their camp and the pathway up to where Rand fought. In the space between, Aiel and Red Veils roved in bands, each trying to best the other. Only,
some of the Red Veils could channel. The ground thumped and shook nearby. A spray of soil fell through the air. Avienda crouched down lower but quickened her pace. Ahead, over a dozen Siswayaman were rushing the position of two Red Veils, both channelers. The Red Veils cast up the earth beneath the attackers, sending bodies flying. Avienda understood why the Aiel kept going. These Red Veils were an affront, a crime. The Shanshan, who would dare take wise ones captive, were not as disgusting as these. Somehow the Shadow had taken the bravest of the Aiel and made them into these things. Avienda struck quickly, pulling strength through her Angreal and her circle, weaving two lines of fire and hurling them at the Red Veils. She began new weaves immediately, casting up the ground beneath the two channelers and started a third set of weaves. She threw fire at the Red Veils as they stumbled. One jumped away as the other was caught in her earthen blasts. She struck the one who had fled with spears of flame. Then she hit both corpses with an extra burst of power, just to make certain. These men no longer held to Jito. They were no longer alive. They were weeds to be pulled. She moved forward to check on the Siswayaman. Eight still lived, three of them wounded. Avienda was not particularly good with healing, but she was able to save the life of one man, keeping a wound in his throat from bleeding out. The other survivors gathered the wounded and moved back toward the camp. Avienda stood above the two corpses. She decided not to look at them closely. Seeing one man she had known was bad enough. A shock went through her, and one of her wells of power vanished. Avienda gasped. Another one winked out. She immediately released the circle, then dashed back to where she had left the women. Flashes and explosions shook her. Avienda clung to the one power, her own strength now seeming pitifully small compared to what she'd been using. She stumbled to a halt before the smoldering corpses of Kiruna and Faeldrin. The hideous woman she had seen before, the woman that Avienda was increasingly certain was one of the Forsaken, stood there smiling at her. The horrid woman had her hand on Serene's shoulder. The slender white stood with her head turned toward the Forsaken, staring at her with vapid, adoring eyes. Serene's warder lay dead at her feet. Both vanished, twisting upon themselves, traveling without use of a gateway. Avienda fell to her knees beside the dead. Nearby, Dahmer Flynn groaned and tried to pull himself free of the cast-up earth. His left arm was completely gone, burned away at the shoulder. Avienda cursed and did what she could to heal him, though he slipped into unconsciousness. She suddenly felt very tired, and very, very alone.